Quick heads up before we get started. This deep dive is brought to you by Cert Fuel. They actually have a full Series 3 course with, adaptive study quizzes, smart flashcards, and unlimited practice exams that are weighted exactly like the real thing, which is huge.
Oh, yeah, totally essential.
Yeah, I mean, it is exactly what you need to lock this stuff in. So check it out at certfuel.com. All right, well, let's just get right into it. You are listening to this right now because you are, well, you're staring down the barrel of this Series 3 exam.
It's a beast.
It really is. And I want to validate exactly where you are sitting mentally right now, because the material we are unpacking today, market structure, is just massive. Mm-hmm. I mean, it spans roughly 71% of the exam across those first seven chapters.
Yeah, that is not a typo, by the way.
Right, 71%.
It is the absolute core of the test. I mean, you simply cannot pass without mastering this specific dynamic. But, you know, here's the silver lining that I want to offer right out of the gate.
Please give us a silver lining, because 71% is terrifying.
Right, well, this massive intimidating unit we're covering today, it really turns on one single unifying concept. Mm-hmm. And that concept is direction.
Direction. Okay.
Okay.
I mean, that sounds deceptively simple. When you say direction, in the context of commodities, we are really talking about a ladder, right? Like a physical ladder.
Yeah. Think of it exactly like a ladder. Because you aren't just looking at one single price for a commodity. It's not like buying a stock where Apple is just, one price today.
Right.
You are looking at the same commodity, let's say it's soybeans or crude oil, but has different delivery months.
So like a price for March, a price for May, a price for July, a price for December.
Exactly. That is your price ladder. And which rung of that ladder is priced higher, meaning, which direction the prices are flowing over time, that tells you everything you need to know about the reality of the physical market.
Okay. And from what I understand, there are really only two structures you actually need to know for this exam, like at a high level, normal and inverted.
Yep. Just two.
And the beauty of this is that they are absolute mirror images of each other. Like, yeah, they are exact opposites.
They really are. I mean, if you learn the fundamental rules for one, you automatically know the rules for the other by simply reversing them in your head.
Okay, wait, hold on. I need to break the fourth wall for a second here and just talk directly to you, the listener, because I know how ADHD brains work when you're studying for a high-stakes test like this.
The urge to just memorize is so strong.
It is. The overwhelming temptation right now is to just, grab an index card, write normal market equals X, and try to brute force memorize the definition. Do not do that. I'm literally begging you.
Yeah, that's a trap.
We are going to figure out the why today. Because if you know the why, you cannot be tricked on exam day. And the Series 3 examiners, I mean, let's be real. They live to trick you.
Oh, they absolutely do. They will throw these weird, convoluted scenarios at you that you haven't memorized. And if you only know the vocabulary without understanding the actual mechanics, you will just freeze. But if you understand the underlying physical logic, like the actual real-world physics of the market, the vocabulary just kind of falls into place naturally.
Okay, so to understand when the market gets weird, we first have to understand the default everyday reality of a physical storable commodity. Let's establish that baseline first.
Yeah, let's do that. So the baseline is what we call a normal market. It is the default structure under, everyday calm conditions. And here is the visual pattern you need to lock in.
Okay, give us the visual.
In a normal market, the distant or the deferred delivery months are priced higher than the nearby delivery months.
So distant months are more expensive. If I'm buying a contract for December, it just straight up costs more than a contract for next month.
Yes. The cash price, which is the spot price, the price you would pay for the physical commodity right this exact second, that is the absolute lowest point on the ladder.
Got it.
And as you step further out into the future, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, the price just steadily climbs. It creates this nice upward sloping curve on a chart.
Okay, so I'm picturing a staircase going up. The further out in time I look, the more expensive the contract is. But again, back to our golden rule here, why?
Right, the why.
Like, why on earth would I pay more for soybeans next December than I would for those exact same soybeans today? That seems totally counterintuitive if you just think about buying things in a normal store. Like, things go on sale later, they don't get more expensive.
And that brings us to, honestly, the single most important concept in this entire section, carrying charges.
Carrying charges.
Yeah. To understand carrying charges, we have to ground this in physical reality. We aren't just trading numbers on a screen. We're trading real stuff.
And to do that, to make this real, I want to introduce a friend of ours to the listener. Let's call him Farmer Phil. We are going to be checking in with Phil a lot today.
Farmer Phil is the perfect illustration for this. So imagine Phil has just finished this massive, record-breaking harvest in the Midwest. I mean, he has an absurd mountain-sized pile of soybeans.
We are talking tens of thousands of bushels of premium soybeans, just a ridiculous amount of beans.
A literal mountain. Now, Phil doesn't want to sell them today, right? He wants to lock in a price to sell them for delivery 6 months from now, using a futures contract.
Those soybeans physically exist right now. Like, they are literally sitting on his farm today.
They do. They are real, tangible things taking up physical space in the real world.
So, listener, I'm asking you directly right now, take a second and actually think about this. If you are the person buying Phil's soybeans for delivery in December instead of today, what is Phil doing with those beans for the next 6 months?
Yeah, think about it.
He's not keeping them in his living room.
No, he's not. He has to put them somewhere. And that somewhere is definitely not free.
Right. The beans are sitting around in the physical world, and this is exactly where we get the three specific costs that make up carrying charges. Let's break them down one by one because you have to know these. Cost number one, storage.
Storage. Yeah, this is the physical real estate. Phil has to rent a massive, probably climate-controlled grain silo. He pays a hefty monthly fee just to keep the commodity housed so it doesn't, you know, rot in a muddy field or get ruined by moisture.
So every single month he holds those beans, the silo owner sends him a bill. That is cost number one. It's just rent.
Exactly.
Okay, cost number two is insurance. Because do you really think Phil is just going to leave $1 million worth of soybeans in a giant metal tube without protecting his investment?
Very unlikely. Mm. I mean, he needs a policy against fire, against theft, against pest infestations. You know, rodents love soybeans.
Exactly. Phil is out there installing like laser tripwires and hiring armed security guards for his premium soybeans. Okay, well, maybe not laser tripwires, but you get the point.
Right. The point is every single month, another insurance premium is due.
And then there's the third cost, which, and I think you'd agree with this, is the one test takers most frequently forget, but it is so critical. Financing or interest.
Oh, this one trips everyone up.
Yeah.
But it's huge.
Wait, unpack the financing part for me. Why is interest considered a cost of storing a physical good? Like, how does that make sense?
Because Phil has a massive amount of capital tied up in those soybeans. Think about the opportunity costs here. If he sold them today in the cash market, he could take that $1 million and put it in a bank, right? And he'd be earning interest on it.
Oh, right.
So by choosing to hold the beans for 6 months instead, he is voluntarily giving up 6 months of interest income. That is a real financial cost.
Oh, I see. Or honestly, more likely, he didn't just have $1 million sitting around in cash. He probably took out a massive bank loan to buy the seed, fuel the tractors, and pay the farmhands to harvest those beans in the first place.
Exactly. That's the reality of farming. And he is actively paying interest to a bank on that loan every single month. He doesn't sell the crop and pay the loan back.
Okay, so let's tally this up. For 6 months, Farmer Phil is paying rent on the silo. He is paying premiums to the insurance company, and he is bleeding interest to the bank. That is a ton of overhead.
It really is. And this total overhead, all three of those costs combined, is what we call the cost of carry.
So when Phil goes to the futures market to sell his December contract, is he just going to sell it for the exact same price he would sell it for today?
I mean, he would be taking a massive financial loss if he did. He absolutely must charge a higher price for that deferred delivery to cover those accumulating costs of storage, insurance, and financing. Essentially, he just passes those carrying charges right onto the buyer.
Boom, right there. That is why the distant months are priced higher. The price ladder climbs because the costs of carrying the physical commodity literally pile up month after month after month.
Yeah, that's it.
If you buy a distant contract, you are basically just paying Farmer Phil to babysit your soybeans.
That is a perfect way to put it. You're paying a babysitting fee.
Mm.
Which brings us perfectly to our first major exam trap.
Oh, let's hear it.
The exam will try to weaponize the word normal against you.
This is a huge trap, guys. Listen closely to this.
Right. Because in everyday conversation, when we say things are normal, we mean they're calm. We mean nothing crazy is happening. You know, the market is stable. Nobody is panicking.
Like, oh, it's just a normal day.
Exactly. But on the Series 3, normal is a strictly defined technical term. It has absolutely nothing to do with the mood of the market.
Normal is not a vibe.
It is not a vibe. It strictly and exclusively means that the deferred months are priced above the nearby months. That is it. That's the whole definition.
So the market could be going crazy.
A normal market can be wildly volatile. Prices could be swinging 20% a day, up and down. But as long as that upward slope exists, as long as distant is more expensive than nearby, it is technically a normal market.
Wow. Okay. And the exam will dress this concept up in different outfits to see if you recognize it. You need to know the synonyms here. Let's go through the aliases.
Yes. There are three highly testable synonyms for a normal market that the exam uses totally interchangeably. You must treat them as identical concepts.
Okay.
The first is a carrying charge market.
Well, that makes perfect sense based on what we just talked about. We know that carrying charges cause the upward slope, so easy enough.
Right. The second one is a premium market.
Also logical. You are paying a premium to take delivery later. You're paying the babysitting fee.
Exactly. And the third, which is heavily borrowed from the broader financial markets, is contango.
Contango. Man, I always loved that word.
That's a great word.
It sounds like a spicy forbidden dance you do in Havana or something. But in reality, it just means you're paying Farmer Phil his silo rent.
Pretty much, yeah.
So normal, carrying charge, premium, contango, they all mean the exact same thing. The ladder is climbing. The distant months are more expensive.
I really cannot stress this enough. If a multiple choice question on the exam offers, say, contango and premium market as two different competing answers, you can instantly eliminate both of them.
Wait, really? Just instantly?
Instantly. It is a trick question.
Right.
Because they are exactly the same thing. They can't both be the right answer, so they both have to be wrong.
Oh, that is a fantastic test-taking hack. Okay, so Farmer Phil is adding his storage, insurance, and financing costs to his December contract. This creates our upward slope. But this raises a huge logical question for me.
Okay, what is it?
If Phil can just charge extra to cover his costs, what stops him from just making up a crazy number?
How do you mean? Like gouging?
Yeah, exactly. Let's say his actual real-world carrying charges for 6 months add up to exactly $1 per bushel.
Right.
Can Phil wake up one morning and decide to charge a $10 premium on that six-month contract? Is there anything stopping him from just building a $1 million premium into the distant month just because he feels like it?
This is a crucial concept. Yes, there is a very, very powerful force stopping him. That upward slope has a hard mathematical lid on it. We call this ceiling full carry, or sometimes a full charge market.
Full carry. Okay, let's define that really clearly.
A full carry market exists when the price difference between two delivery months exactly equals the total actual cost of storage, insurance, and financing.
So if the actual real world cost to rent the silo, pay the insurance, and cover the interest is exactly $1 per bushel for 6 months, then full carry is exactly $1.
Right. The premium of the distant month has grown just large enough to completely reimburse the holder for their expenses. No more, no less.
Okay, here's my direct question to you, the listener. Pause what you're doing and think about this. If full carry is exactly $1 and Farmer Phil gets greedy and tries to sell his distant contract at a $2 premium, what happens?
Yeah, what forces him back down?
Think about it.
The market corrects him almost instantly. Because arbitrage traders step in.
I love these guys. I like to call them the bouncers of the futures market. Let's introduce a new character to our universe, Bouncer Bob.
Perfect. Arbitrage traders like Bouncer Bob are out there hunting for riskless profit. They don't care about the fundamental value of soybeans. They don't care about farming. They're just constantly scanning the market for math that doesn't make sense.
So Bouncer Bob is sitting at his computer terminal. He knows the actual cost of carry is $1. He looks at Farmer Phil, who is actively trying to sell a distant contract for a $2 premium.
Right.
Bob says, hold on a second. That math is broken. That's free money. Walk me through Bob's exact play here. How does he get the free money?
It is a simultaneous two-part transaction. Bob goes to the cash market, the spot market, and immediately buys the cheap physical soybeans today.
Okay, so Bob just bought a mountain of physical beans. He owns them.
Yep. Then, in the exact same second, he turns around and sells Farmer Phil's overpriced distant futures contract.
Okay, let's put numbers to this to make it super concrete for the listener.
Wow.
He bought the physical beans for, let's say, $10 a bushel.
Okay.
He knows he has to pay $1 out of his own pocket to store and insure them for those 6 months. So his total all-in cost is $11, right?
Yep, $11 break even.
But he just sold the six-month futures contract for $12. Because Phil was pricing it at a $2 premium.
Exactly. So he just locked in a guaranteed riskless profit of $1 per bushel.
Wait, I want to push back on that because a struggling test taker might be thinking, Isn't Bob taking a massive risk by buying physical soybeans? Like, what if the global market crashes tomorrow?
That is the beautiful part of arbitrage.
Right.
Because he simultaneously sold the futures contract, his sale price is locked in at $12.
Oh, right.
If the market crashes, sure, his physical beans lose value. But his short futures position gains the exact same amount of value. They perfectly offset each other. All that remains is the spread between what he paid plus carry and what he sold for. That spread is pure guaranteed profit.
So he bought low in the nearby cash market and he sold high in the distant futures market. And because Bouncer Bob and like 1,000 other arbitrage traders are executing this exact same trade at the exact same millisecond, what is the physical impact on the market?
Massive buying pressure in the nearby market pushes the spot price up.
Right.
And massive selling pressure on the distant contract pushes the deferred price down.
Wow. So the bouncers literally physically compress the spread.
They crush the premium back down until it hits exactly full carry, which is $1. And the moment the premium drops back down to $1, the free money vanishes, and the arbitrage traders just pack up and walk away.
So Farmer Phil physically cannot charge more than full carry because the second he tries, the bouncers step in, take the free money, and crush the spread back down. Therefore, the premium of a distant month cannot exceed full carry.
Which brings us to exam trap callout number 2. This one is insidious, honestly, and you will see it worded very trickily on the exam.
Okay, let's hear it.
Full carry is a ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely not a floor.
Break that down for us. Why isn't it a floor?
Well, we just proved why the spread cannot go above full carry, right?
Yeah.
Arbitrage prevents it. But there is absolutely nothing in the mechanics of the market that forces the spread to go up to full carry.
Oh, I see. So if the actual cost to store the beans is a dollar, Farmer Phil can choose to sell his distant contract for a 50-cent premium if he wants to.
Yes, exactly.
Like, maybe he just really wants to offload the risk of holding the beans, so he voluntarily takes a 50-cent loss on his storage costs just to get the deal done and get it off his mind.
That happens all the time. And it is called a partial carry market. In fact, a normal market trades at a partial carry almost all the time. The market does not owe Farmer Phil a full reimbursement of his storage costs.
So the spread can be tiny, it can be a penny, it can be 99 cents, it just can't be a dollar and 1 cent.
Right.
The bouncers only care if you break the ceiling. They do not care how low the floor goes.
Exactly. And the exam will try to trick you by stating a normal market always trades at full carry, or must eventually reach full carry. That is false. It is merely capped by it.
All right, let's reset the energy here for a second. Take a breath. We have mastered the default. We know the ladder climbs. We know the climbing ladder is called normal, premium, or contango.
Yep.
We know it climbs because of storage, insurance, and financing. And we know the climb has a hard mathematical ceiling enforced by Bouncer Bob and his arbitrage friends.
That is the baseline reality for a storable commodity.
But what happens when reality breaks?
Oh, this is the fun part.
What happens when the physical world catches on fire and someone needs that commodity right this second? This is where we flip the board completely upside down. We're entering the chaotic world of inverted markets.
An inverted market is precisely what it sounds like. It is the exact mirror image, the complete reverse of everything we just talked about with Farmer Phil.
So if a normal market is a staircase going up, an inverted market is a staircase going down.
Yes. In an inverted market, the nearby or near-term delivery months trade at higher prices than the distant months.
So the cash price, the spot price right now, sits at the absolute peak, way above all the futures prices.
Exactly.
And as you go further out in time, each successive month is cheaper than the one before it. The curve slopes downward.
It does.
Okay, golden rule time. Why? We know that in a normal market, the upward slope is caused by carrying charges. So what on earth causes a downward slope? Like, why would something be cheaper in the future?
To understand this, we have to introduce our second character.
Oh, yes. Everyone say hello to Refiner Rita.
Refiner Rita operates in a completely different reality than Farmer Phil.
Totally different. Rita runs an oil refinery. And this isn't a small operation. This is a multi-billion dollar plant that produces a massive chunk of the regional aviation fuel supply.
Right.
Her entire business model relies on crude oil flowing continuously through those pipes 24/7. If it stops, it's a disaster.
Now, imagine there is a sudden severe supply shock. Maybe a major pipeline broke. Maybe there is a sudden geopolitical crisis that halts shipping. Whatever the reason, Rita checks her monitors and realizes her storage tanks are completely empty.
Oh, man. If she runs out of crude oil today, her multi-billion dollar plant shuts down. The pipes freeze up. Her contracts with the major airlines are breached. She loses millions of dollars an hour, and honestly, she is out of a job.
It's an existential crisis for her business.
So Rita gets on the phone to the market, absolutely panicking.
And Farmer Phil, who apparently also dabbles in oil futures in his spare time, answers the phone and says, "Hey, Rita, don't worry. I can sell you some crude oil for a fantastic cheap price for delivery 6 months from now."
Okay, I am pushing back on Phil right here. Because wow. Rita does not care that Phil has a great deal in 6 months.
No, she does not.
6 months from now, Rita is bankrupt. She cannot fuel airplanes today with a piece of paper dated for December. She needs physical barrels of oil flowing into her plant today, like this afternoon.
Which means Rita is willing to pay an enormous, totally irrational premium for immediate delivery.
She will pay whatever it takes. I mean, if the normal price of oil is $70 a barrel, Rita might scream into the phone, "I'll pay $100 a barrel if you can deliver it to my plant by midnight."
And this desperation, this urgent, immediate demand, it utterly defeats the logic of storage costs. It blows right past it.
It is a near-term supply shortage. Buyers are actively bidding up the nearby price just to secure the product immediately.
That is the single most important concept regarding an inverted market. The primary driver is scarcity. It is a near-term supply shortage or an overwhelmingly urgent demand for immediate physical delivery.
Which brings us to exam trap callout number 3. And I am flagging this with maximum energy because it is arguably the most tested trick in this entire unit. Listen to me very carefully. Carrying charges cannot cause an inverted market.
It is physically, mathematically impossible.
Think about the mechanics, guys. Storage, insurance, and financing, what do? They make things more expensive over time. They push distant months UP.
Always.
If the market is slipping downward, if nearby is $100 and distant is $70, carrying charges have absolutely nothing to do with creating that downward slope.
In fact, an inverted market structure actively defies carrying charges. The market is paying more for immediate delivery than for later delivery. That is the exact opposite of what storage costs would dictate.
So if you get a question on the Series 3 that asks, which of the following causes an inverted market? And one of the options is, you know, an increase in storage costs. You laugh, you cross it out, and you move on.
Exactly.
Carrying charges cause normal markets. Shortages cause inverted markets. Period. End of story.
The logic here is so strong that we actually have a specific synonym for inverted markets that plays on this exact concept. Let's lush the aliases for an inverted market, because just like normal markets, the exam will absolutely test your vocabulary here.
Okay, what are the testable synonyms for an inverted market? Let's give them the list.
The first synonym is a discount market.
Okay, well, that makes sense as the mirror image of a premium market. The distant months are trading at a discount compared to the nearby months.
Right. The second synonym is backwardation.
The opposite of contango. Backwardation. Honestly, it just sounds like everything is moving backwards, which in terms of price flow, it basically is.
It is. And the third synonym is the one we were just alluding to, a market showing inverse carrying charges.
Okay, we need to pause and really dissect this phrase, because inverse carrying charges is deeply tricky. It trips up a lot of people, especially if your brain tends to skim over words when you're stressed.
It's a very confusing phrase.
When I first read that, I genuinely thought it meant that someone was paying me to store the oil, like negative rent. Like the silo owner is handing me cash to put my stuff in his building.
Right. A lot of people make that exact assumption, but that is not what it means in the physical world. The silo owner is never, ever going to pay you to use his silo.
Exactly. Inverse carrying charges doesn't mean Farmer Phil is paying you to store things. It just means the mathematical price spread is running in the wrong direction relative to normal carrying charges.
It is purely a mathematical term. Look at it this way. In a normal market, if you take the distant month and subtract the nearby month, you get a positive number, right?
Yeah.
That positive number is the carrying charge. But in an inverted market, if you take the distant month and subtract the nearby month, you get a negative number. The spread is mathematically inverted.
Okay, so if you see the phrase inverse carrying charges on the exam, don't overthink the physical reality of it. Just translate it in your head to inverted market and keep moving. It just means Refinerita is panicking.
That's the best way to handle it. Now, we have spent a lot of time talking about a literal panic-inducing shortage causing an inversion. You know, Refinerita needs oil today to avoid catastrophe. But the material also points out there are a few other slightly more nuanced conditions that can also cause this downward slope.
Oh, that is a great point. It is not always a sudden pipeline explosion or a war. What else can flip the ladder upside down?
One major driver is the expectation of massive future supply.
Oh, this is fascinating. Explain how that works, because there's no panic there.
Let's go back to agriculture. Suppose it is July, and the physical supply of corn right now is very, very tight. There isn't much left over from last year's harvest, so the nearby July cash price is very high. People who need corn today to feed their livestock are paying a steep premium.
But everyone in the market knows that in October, the biggest corn harvest in history is going to hit the market.
Exactly. The market knows that in just a few months, corn is going to be absolutely everywhere. It will be cheap and abundant.
So nobody is going to pay a premium for a December futures contract. They know supply is about to loosen up massively.
Right. The nearby months are bid up because of current tightness, but the deferred months are actively dragged down because everyone expects a flood of supply later. The result?
No.
A downward sloping curve.
Yeah.
An inverted market.
That is a perfect example. The current market is tight, but the future market is expected to be flooded. Nearby is high, distant is low. Inverted.
Another related factor that drives inversion is simply the pure economic benefit of holding the physical product now during a tight market.
I think I've heard this called the convenience yield, right?
Yes, convenience yield. When a commodity is scarce, just having it physically sitting in your warehouse provides a massive tangible benefit. It allows you to keep your factory running without interruption. It allows you to fill unexpected customer orders at a huge markup. It provides operational security.
Yeah.
That convenience has a very real financial value, and buyers will bid up the nearby price to secure that physical security today.
They are willing to eat the cost of not waiting, because having it now is like a superpower. It all comes back to urgency versus patience, scarcity versus abundance.
This is a perfect moment to lock these two realities together. On the exam, you need a way to look at a single question, a single data point, and instantly know which reality you are in. Are we in Farmer Phil's world of abundance and storage? Or Refiner Rita's world of scarcity and panic?
Okay, let's do the Socratic style. I want you to test me. Give me the feature, and I will try to define it for both structures without looking at my notes. Let's see if I actually learn this.
All right, let's see how well you have this locked in. Feature number one. What is the relationship between the cash price and futures prices?
Okay, in a normal market, cash is at the bottom, below futures, because carrying charges push the futures up. In an inverted market, cash is at the peak, firmly above all futures, because urgency pulls the immediate cash price up.
Spot on. Okay, feature number two, the slope of the curve.
Normal market is an upward slope. The ladder climbs over time. Inverted market is a downward slope. The ladder falls over time.
Correct. Feature number three, the fundamental driver.
Normal market is driven by carrying charges, storage, insurance, and financing. Inverted market is driven by shortage, scarcity, or urgent immediate demand.
And finally, the synonyms.
For normal, the exam might say premium, carrying charge, or contango. For inverted, they might say discount, backwardation, or inverse carrying charges.
Excellent. I mean, if you can hold those distinctions in your head, you can answer virtually any market structure question on the Series 3.
And to make absolutely sure you hold it in your head, I'm going to share the ultimate memory aid. Expert, walk us through the golden mnemonic for test day.
I highly recommend writing this on your scratch paper the absolute second you sit down in the testing center and the clock starts. Are you ready?
Give it to me.
N normal equals N nearby is cheaper. Both start with N. Normal equals nearby is cheaper.
Ah, I see. If the nearby is cheaper, it automatically means the ladder is climbing. The distant months are more expensive. Normal, nearby, cheaper. N. What about the other side?
Inverted equals I immediate is on top. Both start with I. Inverted equals immediate is on top.
If the immediate, the cash, or the nearby month is on top, the ladder has to be falling. Inverted, immediate on top. I. That is brilliant.
N is nearby cheaper. I is immediate on top. It saves so much time.
Okay, let's pause. I'm going to test you, the listener, right now. I'm going to ask you a direct question, and I want you to answer it in your head before I give you the solution. Are you ready?
Here is the scenario.
You get a question on the exam, and it says, in looking at a price table for crude oil, you notice that cash prices are sitting firmly above all futures prices. My question to you is, which market are you in? Normal or inverted? Think about it.
Take the setting.
Immediate is on top. Cash is above futures. I equals I. That means you are in an inverted market. Refiner Rita is panicking.
Let's try another one. The exam asks, which of the following market structures is primarily driven by the costs of storage, insurance, and financing?
Think about it. Storage, insurance, financing, those are carrying charges. Who pays carrying charges? Farmer Phil, why? Because he is holding abundant soybeans for a long time. What does that do to the price? It makes the distant months more expensive, the ladder climbs. So N for nearby is cheaper. That means it is a normal market.
Jeez, you are reasoning through the physics of the market, not just guessing off a memorized flashcard. Let's do one more, a slightly trickier one.
Hit me. Let's do it.
The exam says, a particular commodity is currently trading in contango. Which of the following statements must be true? A, the cash price is above the futures price. B, the distant months are trading at a premium to the nearby months. C, the market is experiencing a severe supply shortage.
Okay, let's break it down step by step. First, translate the vocabulary. What is contango? Contango is the Havana dance Farmer Phil does when he pays his silo rent.
Exactly.
Contango means normal market. Okay, so we are in a normal market.
Now test the options against the physical rules of a normal market.
Option A, the cash price is above the futures price. False. In a normal market, cash is at the absolute bottom. Option C, the market is experiencing a severe supply shortage. False. Shortages cause inverted markets. Option B, the distant months are trading at a premium to the nearby months. Yes. Normal means nearby is cheaper, which mathematically means distant is at a premium. Option B is the answer.
That is exactly how you dissect a Series 3 question. Translate the terminology, visualize the physical ladder, and apply the logic of the underlying driver.
You guys are going to crush this exam. We are in the home stretch now, so let's lock in the rapid-fire recap. These are the top 5 testable takeaways from this entire deep dive, the absolute non-negotiables.
Okay, takeaway number 1, direction is everything. Deferred high equals normal. Nearby high equals inverted. Remember the mnemonic. N for nearby cheaper, I for immediate on top.
Takeaway number 2, normal markets are fundamentally driven by carrying charges. You must know the 3 components, storage, insurance, and financing or interest.
Takeaway number 3, inverted markets are driven by shortages and urgent demand. They are never driven by carrying charges because the downward slope actively defies the math of carry.
Takeaway number 4, know your exact synonyms. Contango and premium describe a normal market. Backwardation and discount describe an inverted market.
Takeaway number 5, full carry is a mathematical ceiling capped by arbitrage traders. It is never a floor. The market can trade at a partial carry forever, but the second it tries to break above the cost of full carry, arbitrage traders buy the physical, sell the distant, and crush the spread back down.
That recap is pure gold. Listen to that section twice if you need to. Now, before we sign off, I know you always like to leave us with something to chew on.
I do. I have a final provocative thought. I want you to mull over on your own before test day.
Ooh, let's hear it.
We spent a lot of time talking about how Bouncer Bob and the arbitrage traders put a hard cap on the spread in a normal market because they can buy the physical commodity today, store it, and sell the deferred contract. The premium can mathematically never exceed full carry.
Right. It's the free money cap, the ceiling we talked about.
But think about this. Why can't those exact same arbitrage traders put a cap on an inverted market?
Oh, wow. Wait a minute.
Think about the physical mechanics. If the nearby price is skyrocketing because refiner Rita is desperate, why doesn't Bouncer Bob step in and crush that spread back down to normal?
Yeah, why doesn't he?
Well, because to execute that specific arbitrage, Bob would have to sell the physical cash commodity today and buy the distant future.
But he can't sell the physical commodity because there is a shortage. He doesn't have any physical oil to sell.
Exactly. You cannot magically create physical supply during a literal shortage just to execute a math trade on a terminal. If the storage tanks are empty, they are empty.
That is mind-blowing.
That is why, in a normal market, the premium is mathematically capped by full carry. But in an inverted market, the premium on the nearby month can go as high as desperation takes it. Refiner Rita will bid it to the moon to save her refinery from shutting down. There is no mathematical ceiling on panic.
There is no ceiling on panic. That is profound and honestly a terrifyingly accurate way to describe the commodities market. Write that down next to N and I on your scratch paper. There is no ceiling on panic. All right, we are going to leave it there. You are now officially wired to reason through these market structures. You don't have to just stare at dry flashcards anymore. You know why Farmer Phil and Refiner Rita do what they do. You understand what Bouncer Bob is looking for, and you know how to spot the traps the exam is going to lay for you. You have got this. We will see you on the next deep dive. Keep studying, keep questioning the why, and go crush that test.